Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall. I'm going to start off today by saying 419, which is actually tomorrow, but it's a greeting that has quite a history. If you actually understand the history of these United States and indeed the world, which of course isn't taught in the public cesspools anymore, but 419, April the 19th of 1775, most importantly, was the day of the shot heard round the world, the beginning of the War for Independence at Lexington and Concord Greens. It was the original, the real Patriots Day until it was renamed in honor of an event that pretty much ended the formerly free United States rather than began it. I'm talking about 9/11, ironically, being called Patriots Day instead of the real one. And how obscene is that? Of course, there are other things that have happened on that same date when it comes to April the 19th or 419 for both tyranny and liberty, if you want to put it that way. Among them, the end of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising by the Nazis during World War II. Years later, in 1991, the Final Solution at Waco, the execution of a whole bunch of people in their church, happened on this date. And 2 years to the very day later, a lot of the evidence was destroyed, along with a bunch of other convenient evidence, when the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City was bombed. And no, Tim McVeigh's little truck bomb, even though in the official narrative it kept growing and growing, didn't do the damage that you saw, much less the stuff you weren't allowed to see. And a lot of kids were killed there, too, because some of them didn't get the word in advance, like most of the BATF in the area evidently did. Anyway, it's the contradictions, the disconnects, and the outright lies in all of these things that kind of help us, I contend, to understand when we're being lied to. In any case, that's kind of a way I wanted to begin the show today anyway, because we're going to talk about contradictions, incongruities, and those are things I use frequently to illustrate certain points. Oftentimes, if you want to understand, for example, why the Bill of Rights are pretty much a dead letter, well, you look at the contradictions between what it says and what's being done, and ask yourselves, well, are these people just really that stupid? Beyond words, they don't know what the Constitution says, or are they simply lying through their teeth when they put their hand on a Bible and make a promise they don't intend to keep? Take your pick. I mean, really, could anybody truly be that stupid, other than perhaps the occasional cortex on the House floor? I tend to come down on the side of, more often than not, it's evil rather than brainless. And ultimately, the other thing I think that I want to point out and kind of emphasize today is that literally, when we think about where we are and what's going on in the world, and of course, most importantly, the focus of this show, what we can do about it, pretty much the nasty stuff that we see boils down into two major groups. And maybe you could put some more finer gradations on it, but essentially it's things we can do something about, even if the something that we can do about it is just to speak up and to educate our family and neighbors and so forth. But one way or the other, there are a lot of things that we have more control over than we might think. There are things we can do something about. On the other hand, there are other things, like what's going to happen on the sun, for example, with future climate issues, that ultimately we can't do much about, and at least not in a physical sense. So there are other things, and I like to put it this way, that we simply need to pray about. Now, that applies to everything in a lot of cases, but at least when you can't do anything in a physical sense, prayer, nevertheless, is a great alternative, and it beats saying, well, I can't do anything about it, let's just be fatalistic. Where I'm headed today, in addition to the 419 aspect, is, well, let's just call it contradictions from incongruity to absurdity to obscenity. And the fact that oftentimes, as I use contradictions to illustrate the difference between those two things, things we can do something about and things that we need to pray about, there are also a lot of things that even if we can't necessarily do something about them other than pray, just informing other people is definitely something we can still do. One more thing up front here, too. There are a lot of takings going on nowadays. Some of them have been building for a long time now. Takings of children. That's especially true, of course, if you allow the Almighty State to believe that it has jurisdiction over them as opposed to what your Creator gave you jurisdiction over. Things like your guns, which, well, shall not be infringed no longer applies, and private property no longer does either. Obviously, your money, and most Americans don't know it. That's part of the ignorance that's enabled this to happen. But we haven't had honest money or real money in the United States, constitutional money, for decades at this point. A lot of people have never seen or used real money in their entire lifetimes. And that, of course, most importantly, happened in 1965 with the evil Lyndon Baines Johnson, who got rid of the last vestiges of constitutional coinage. The Constitution says nothing but gold or silver coin shall be made a tender in payment of debt. And after 1965, all of the constitutional coinage rapidly disappeared from circulation. By Tricky Dick's time, 1971, August, even money that was available to the international bankster community and was supposed to be redeemable in gold was no longer as good as gold. And, of course, if you go back and look at the history, and we've talked about this as well frequently, once upon a time, a man's home was his castle. Every man a king was one of the slogans of the Revolutionary War era. In other words, in England, by feudal right, the king owned title to all lands. And in the United States, back when we had a real constitution and real freedom, people owned title in what was called fee simple absolute, or allodium. You could actually own the land. And guess what? If you owed the land, you didn't pay anybody property taxes on it because it was yours, a.k.a. no rent. And if you wanted to build something, well, guess what? You built it. If you wanted to dig a pond or a ditch, you did it. If you wanted to paint your house, for crying out loud, you could even do that. But you can't, in most places in America, do any of those things, which means, obviously, you don't have real ownership of the land any more than Big Brother wants you to have ownership of your guns or other things that you thought were yours. Because slaves, of course, can't own anything. Now, what we're going to talk about today are other things that are on that same list, the contradictions that I hope, if we'll commit them to our understanding, we can use to open the eyes of other people, either family or friends or neighbors. So if they can take your children, your guns, your money, your land, why not next things like your seeds? Literally, seeds. Can you imagine that? Water and, of course, ultimately, your life. If they can take away water, most folks aren't going to live very long after that, which is why it's a great UN control mechanism. Now, let me throw out one other element before we go into the contradictions that I want to start with today. Some of the can-do themes here, of course, are going to sound real familiar because they're repeated a lot. I repeat them, and part of the reason I repeat them is because Scripture repeats them over and over again, and, of course, so does history. So let's talk about just some of the big deals from this week, starting, of course, early on in the week. Almost everybody's no doubt heard about this. One of the most famed, iconic cathedrals in the entire world, Notre Dame in Paris, was burned. Not completely destroyed, but certainly it was a major blow. And what was particularly interesting was the way that media coverage immediately swung into action. Now, we're used to seeing this when there's a false flag. Almost immediately what you'll hear is, even though it happened in a gun-free killing zone, and the person, usually they commit arsonicide before they can testify or otherwise reveal who put them up to it. Well, they disappear. They get quiet. We don't hear about it, and of course, then the press is able to say with Big Brother's pressure on them, well, there's no act of terror here. This doesn't look like terror. This was a lone gunman. This was a lone nutcase. How many times have we heard it? Well, in the case of Notre Dame, it was no. This was renovation work. This was an accident. No terrorism here. Nothing to see here. Move along. As you might suspect, not everybody's buying it, including a number of people associated with Notre Dame and the Catholic Church and similar places. But even on the supposedly not quite as fake faux news, F-O-X, faux news, there were a lot of folks that were shut down for trying to suggest that. I won't go through all of the reports, but let's just say they were legion. BBC, right after the thing happened, said what we expected to hear. The cause is not yet clear, but officials say it could be linked to renovation work. But early unverified reports, and that's what J.D. Hayes at Natural News emphasizes, claim that perhaps the burning of this historic Catholic or Christian site was intentional. A columnist for Time named Christopher Hale tweeted midday on Monday, "A Jesuit friend in Paris who works at Notre Dame told me cathedral staff said the fire was intentionally set. There were reports of various Islamic groups claiming credit. The usual, well, suspicious indications, including early reports that there were more than one site of the origin of the fire to begin with. Well, that almost certainly spells arson. But all of that rapidly disappeared. And as Paul Joseph Watson pointed out, Christopher Hale deleted his tweet, walked it back. Others have indicated, hey, look, in France there are an incredible number of churches being desecrated, burned, otherwise destroyed, religious artifacts, you name it, to the tune of at least one, sometimes a couple a week. Watson noted that the Saint Sulpice Church in Paris was intentionally set afire earlier this year, but the leftist media downplayed those reports. And, of course, the 800-pound elephant in the room, as he notes, is the incredible growing French Muslim population that has made it now one of the highest per capita in Europe. And as a result, or at least in correlation therewith, anti-Christian attacks in France are on the rise. Attacks against Jewish symbols have also risen by 74%. All right, well, you get the picture here. What's interesting to me about all of this is how many times have we seen it? The press is going to lie through their teeth or even shut people up who even try to suggest that there might be more here than meets the eye. Shepard Smith cut off a French official, as I pointed out, who dared to question the PC version. He tried to bring up the reality of the Christian churches throughout his country, of France, that are being desecrated at an alarmingly high rate. Even the Nazis didn't dare destroy it, meaning Notre Dame, he pointed out. And what did Shepard Smith do? Answer, cut him off. Not here on my watch, was what he said. Now, I like the comment from Christina Layla of the Gateway Pundit, who said, if only Fox News shut down people speculating about non-existent Russia collusion with the Trump administration, the same way they cut off their guests speculating that the Notre Dame fire might not have been an accident. You get it? All right, here is the point of this introductory piece today when it comes to the idea of contradictions from incongruity and absurdity to outright obscenity. Should we suspect foul play when we see something like, your typical false flag or your typical arson-looking incident at a building that has basically stood for 900 years up until recently? Obviously. Do we know what's going on here? Certainly not. And here's the real kicker. Are we likely to know after the so-called investigation? No. Just like we don't trust what happened in Las Vegas is one of the obvious examples that immediately comes to mind. All right, gender change gears. Talk about another thing that ultimately people can't necessarily control. And I'm going to say it this way. Non-existent man-made global warming, the climate. Ironically, for the most part, mankind isn't able to do a whole lot with climate, at least not to prevent it from cooling down when the sun cools down, as seems to be happening according to a regular cycle. What we can do, though, is, of course, talk about not only what's really happening, but we can also debunk bogus science. And that's a very handy thing to be able to do. If you have family or neighbors that parrot the official line, and literally, the only way they can get away with that is not having a clue about what science really is. The idea, of course, is data and experiments that either support or serve to reject a hypothesis, right? You have a hypothesis. The climate is heating up, or it's cooling down. Well, you can find the data to indicate yay or nay. Sometimes it's hard because the data can be politically manipulated. How about the cause? That's even more difficult. But we can still have a hypothesis. The climate is warming up as a result of the activities of mankind. And we can design experiments or at least look at the data and either accept or reject the hypothesis. Now, the trouble is, what happens now with politically correct bogus science is the data has nothing to do with it. It's more of a religious thing. The climate is heating up. Man is causing it. I don't give a blankety blank what the data is or what science says, even though I'm going to blame science and claim that it's my God. But I don't really have a clue what it is. That brings me to this story, courtesy of Natural News, about a Harvard scientific paper that's come out detailing geoengineering, that's the politically correct term for chemtrails, using jet aircraft. Now, what's interesting about this, again, on the contradictions and absurdity scale, is the, the motivation here. Let me get to that. Geoengineering, says the piece, is a controversial subject, to say the least. Lots of different theories about its implementation and origins, but geoengineering using aircraft has a long history, in spite of what you might hear from CNN and other purveyors of fake news. And many different forms have existed over the years, from cloud seeding all the way back in the 1960s, including places like Vietnam, in Project Popeye, to ski resorts that still use commercial weather modification companies today in order to create snow. I can remember years ago when I first learned to ski at Lake Eldora in Colorado, not too far from Boulder. They had ski snowmaking equipment with great big huge valves, and we'd see it out when we'd be up there at night skiing, making snow. So, yeah. One way or another, the idea of creating snow and modifying weather is certainly not new. And yet, if you talk about that, you'll be demonized as a conspiracy theory. So it's far from it. Geoengineering, though, is openly being bragged about by both China and Russia, both of which are using jet aircraft and saying so, to spray chemicals to disperse clouds for things like national holiday parades. They're messing with agricultural regions. They publicly admit that. Using jet aircraft and mountaintop dispersal units to inject chemicals into the atmosphere to make rain for crops. But, again, in the politically correct West, if you admit that you understand a little bit about the science, it's a far-out conspiracy theory that people are going to ridicule. The very idea that something like that could even exist is, a nutcase thing, at least. Check it out with Snopes, right? Yeah, they'll tell you the truth. They've never lied. Many observers contend, though, that a secret program already exists in Western countries. Not so secret, folks. It's just officially denied. Here's what's funny. Okay, a Harvard paper by two scientists named Wake Smith and Gernot, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Wagner, has essentially urged Big Brother to begin a program of geoengineering. They propose using high-altitude aircraft to disperse chemicals into the stratosphere to reflect sunlight so as to curb non-existent man-made global warming. The paper, it says, gives a rare insight into how such a thing would operate, how much it would cost, how many planes would be needed, and so forth. And geoengineering that may be actually already occurring, though, is still classified. It's just not that big of a secret if you actually go outside and look up, which most of the people who want to deny science aren't going to bother to do either. The paper even bemoans that, the fact that such a program would be very difficult to keep secret. Well, turns out if you can control the Internet, it's easier than you might think. But instead of keeping it completely secret, some of us have noted that various pilots have taken pictures of airplanes. Sometimes it's the airplane they're supposed to go fly. And they ask, what the heck are those valves mounted on the back of the wings? Those little nozzles that are there? Smith and Wagner say that if aircraft were out flying and leaving long plumes of chemicals behind them that span the entire sky from horizon to horizon and block the sun in a soupy haze, observers would surely notice the changes and the crisscrossing patterns of aircraft trails littering the sky. So, it would be hard to keep secret. Well, you catch the irony there, right? It sounds very familiar to what's being seen so many times daily. Now, people put the pictures up on the web. You'd have to be almost a CNN puppet not to be able to understand what's going on. The paper even goes into the costs of what they call geoengineering for solar radiation management via jet aircraft, and they say it could be done for about $2.25 billion a year, maybe up to $5 billion a year. Hey, we waste a heck of a lot more than that, allowing illegal aliens to come in, probably on a monthly basis. And by the way, that's for the whole globe. But it doesn't include the costs of the health effects on the world's population. Now, here is the funny part, and this is the reason why I went through this story. The ruse here is that these two so-called Harvard scientists propose a new high-altitude tanker with substantial payload capabilities, and we wouldn't have too much trouble technologically or even financially building it and paying for it. It's called strategic aerosol injection. It's already been talked about for a number of years, as it turns out. And they talk about lofting hundreds or thousands or even millions of tons of material each year into the atmosphere. But could it be done in secret? Duh. The article here summarizes this way, and it's a pretty decent analogy. I didn't try to come up with a better one. It's kind of like, says this piece, as if a gang of robbers was on the loose, and everyone can see that they've been smashing windows and breaking into houses all over town as they begin to occasionally look up from their smartphones. A group of professional robbers then publishes a series of detailed articles in the local newspaper describing how to rob homes by smashing windows. Quote, if anybody ever wanted to do it, sometime in the future. Oh, that would be crazy, say people. Don't even believe such a thing. So, I'm going to propose, folks, that when you see articles like this coming out from so-called scientists essentially describing things that obviously have been in progress for a long time, it's kind of what we've gotten used to as a typical deep state backhanded announcement. But also, though, it fits into this idea of contradictions, incongruity, absurdity, and, since they think you're an idiot, even obscenity. Speaking of obscenities, I don't really want to talk about, but I'm going to anyway, because we have to make this point. A guy who has come essentially out of nowhere, deserves to be nowhere, and they call him Mayor Pete. Maybe you know who I'm already talking about. I don't care how the guy pronounces his name, but a lot of folks seem to think Pete Buttplug comes pretty close to it, and I'll get to that in just a second. By the way, before I start into this piece, I'm looking at a story that was written by Patrick J. Buchanan, and he is, of course, a good Catholic, and this article bears that particular slant. It's at least worth thinking about, even though some of us, including your host, would have a difficulty with an item or two in here. Anyway, I want to say this up front. I don't propose to outlaw male-on-male sex like this guy advocates and practices, and literally makes his running position, builds it upon. It's his claim to fame, if you will. The creator of the universe, though, has already outlawed male-on-male sex. His sanctions are clear in his book. And besides which, remember, we're in exile anyway. We're not in the land. So for a whole lot of reasons, it's not so much the issue of what he is doing, but the way that this is being pushed down Americans' throats. As Buchanan notes, Mayor Pete is proudly gay and living openly with his so-called husband. And here's what he said. This is the part that inclined me to even do this story. Mayor Pete says God made him the way he is, and he is living the life God intended for him. Wait a minute. I have heard thieves make the same point. God made me a thief, and I'm just living the life God intended for me. Assassins, I guess, could say the same thing. Child molesters, adulterers, all kinds of people that violate the rules written down in long-preserved, pretty clear, genuine print can make the same claim. God made me this way, so therefore, I don't care what his word says, I can violate it all day because he made me this way. This Bible denier then berated Mike Pence for believing otherwise, saying, yes, Mr. Vice President, it, meaning his gayness, has moved me closer to God. That's the thing I wish Mike Pence's of the world would understand, that if you have a problem with who I am, your quarrel is not with me, your quarrel, sir, is with my Creator. Unquote. And, of course, I've asked this question before. All right, which God is he talking about, though? Obviously, one thing's true. If you look at the contradictions here, it's not the one that wrote the book. And therein lies the rub. Buchanan goes on to talk about some other aspects of this that we'll come back to when we get back from the bottom of the hour break, having to do with the poll numbers of people who profess various types of religiosity and what that says.
Thank you.
to the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And tomorrow is 419, the anniversary of the shot heard around the world that began the War for Independence, as well as other prominent dates in history for both tyranny and liberty. There's a contradiction there arising out of conflict, which is kind of the point of today's show. Can we use contradictions and even conflicts to help see the truth? And what do we do about it in a larger sense as well? And I've suggested that there are basically two kinds of events or pressures in the world. Things we can do something about, deal with, or even change. If you've heard the Serenity Prayer, you know what I'm referring to. And there are things that arguably we can't, other than what we need to do about almost everything, which is things we need to pray about. And there are a lot of things going on in the world that are pretty nasty. Well, as we went to break, I was talking about one of those, and it illustrates a lot of incongruities and the absurdity and even downright obscenity of what's been going on. And to some extent, while we might not be able to make things change nationally, we can certainly do something about it on a personal level. So when I see people who not only want to run your life, but dictate your morality, like this Mayor Pete Buttplug, it's important to remember that we can withdraw our consent. We can refuse to participate. I do have to suggest that looking back at recent history, especially when it comes to the Socialist Party, I can't help but think that probably this guy will be the nominee. If I had to make an early bet, it would be on Mayor Buttplug, primarily because he checks so many PC boxes. So harken back for a second to Bathhouse Barry, who was a closet gay, and yeah, a closet Muslim too, certainly anti-constitutional, and arguably a criminal, anti-American traitor. But now we have a guy who is openly a lot of the things that Obama did quietly and secretly. There's a message there, and that's part of what we're talking about today. I was commenting on this article by Pat Buchanan. I saw it up on Lou Rockwell. He essentially says, if you have a problem with who I am, take it up with my creator. That's whom your quarrel is with, because God made me this way. He is living the life that God intended for him, he says. And as I pointed out, well, any old thief can say the same thing. God made me want to take other people's stuff, to covet other people's stuff, and so I break in and I take it. Hey, I'd be a good politician too, wouldn't I? I could do it on a national scale then. Folks, that's not an excuse. All that says is that somebody either wasn't well-trained or doesn't give a blankety-blank what the creator of the universe actually wrote in his word. And it's a real symptom of why things have gotten so downright nasty where we are. Back to Buchanan, who says, Americans are increasingly non-religious. That's not news. We've been hearing that for a long time. He points out that Americans who profess that they are, either atheists or agnostics or have no religion, now number 23.1% of the population, which exceeds Roman Catholics, the largest single denomination, by a tenth of a point or so, and evangelicals by about a half a percent at 22.5%. And the nuns have grown dramatically by 266% since 1991. Meanwhile, the various mainstream protesting Catholic congregations, United Methodist, Presbyterians, and the like, combined, are not half as numerous as those who profess no religion. And all of this, says Buchanan, is happening with deliberate and downright, dizzying speed. In the lifetime of many Americans, some of us can remember when things like homosexuality and abortion were at least scandalous, if not outright crimes. Now, says Buchanan, they are cherished constitutional rights. Now, wait a minute. Okay, that does bug me a bit. Those things aren't constitutional rights unless you ask somebody who doesn't have any authority, like the U.S. Supreme Court, to say what the Constitution says in genuine print. By the way, look in the Constitution. See if you can find where it says the Supreme Court shall be the final arbiter of all things constitutional. No, it's not in there any more than a right to commit the sin of sodomy or abortion are in there. Matter of fact, the word abortion doesn't appear in the Constitution at all. Neither does marriage. Neither does education. You can't hardly claim something as a constitutional right when it doesn't say anything about it. And in fact, literally prohibits the federal government, by virtue of the fact that it's not an enumerated power, from even having anything to say about it. Now, Buchanan goes on to point out that, and this is where I part company with him as well, but I think it's interesting, and it goes to this theme of contradictions and incongruities. He says this, What butt plug is saying, and I don't know how you pronounce it, again, I don't care, but that makes more sense, is that either God changes his mind and his moral law to conform to the changing behavior of mankind, or that for 2,000 years, think about that for a second, 2,000 years, Christian preaching and practice towards homosexuality has been bigoted, injurious, and morally indefensible. Well, those of us that can read the Bible recognize, no, it goes a lot further back than 2,000 years. And, of course, the Scriptures make a couple of points very clear. I change not, says Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, says a summary of the same line in the book of Hebrews. As you know, the first thing that the real Mashiach, not to be confused with the one who did away with the law and nailed it to the cross, the real Mashiach in the Sermon on the Mount said he wasn't going to change the tiniest part, not one yod or tittle of the Torah or the writings, the prophets, so long as heaven and earth still existed. In other words, until everything has been fulfilled. And if he's coming back, it's pretty hard to claim everything is fulfilled now, isn't it? So here's a place where I'm saying, look, part of the problem is, whether we're talking about Catholic dogma or anti-Catholic dogma, why don't we read what it really says if we're going to refer to Scripture as an authority? To the extent that neither atheists nor good Roman Catholics who put the Pope in the position of the Vicar of Christ actually accept what Scripture says as being the final word on something, I guess I can't argue, right? I don't try to argue Scripture with an atheist, and honestly, I don't try to argue with it with somebody who says, no, no, the Vicar of Christ can change the Sabbath anytime he wants. He can suddenly declare a pork to be food, even though the Mashiach never did, and so forth. The point is, well, to quote Humpty Dumpty, Lewis Carroll, who is to be master? That is all. Either we believe Scripture or we don't. And the same thing is true about the Constitution. Either the Constitution means what it says or it doesn't mean squat. And, of course, you've heard me say this before if you've listened to this show more than once. We have been lied to for 1,700 years by a Romanized, paganized, whore church that says the law is done away with. You can't trust God, even though he wrote it down for you, to not change his mind. And whether we're talking about homosexuality or pork or changing the worship day, the Sabbath day, from the one that he said is to be there throughout your generations and all your dwelling places, ha'olam, forever, to Sun God Day. And here, this weekend, of course, you got people going to say, oh, we're going to change the most important event in human history, the sacrifice of the Mashiach himself, the Torah made flesh. We're going to name that instead after a pagan fertility goddess and celebrate it with bunnies and eggs. You see, the incongruity here is the kind of thing that ought to help us to awaken both ourselves and hopefully our families and maybe even the rest of the population who at least cares about any of these things. Like I said, it's tough to argue Scripture with an atheist. I don't try to do that. On the other hand, you can, if you understand science or whatever else it is that pushes their buttons, go to those documents, studies, data, and show them the incongruity, the absurdity, and even the obscenity of what they're claiming. It's funny to me, for example, how people can push evolution and say evolution is the way that God used to create where we are. And wait a minute, homosexuals can't reproduce. But there's an incongruity there that we'd rather just not talk about. Kind of like we're not going to talk about any evidence that might suggest something that Big Brother doesn't want you to ponder. Was there an Islamic influence in what happened at Notre Dame and so forth? All right, I'm going to do this story real briefly. A gun control advocate, says a piece from Dagny Taggart, love the name, at the Organic Prepper, want banks to refuse service to gun companies. Now, I've talked about this before. This is essentially fascism, a.k.a. the public-private partnership. And basically, what the story goes on to say is that gun control advocates are saying, hey, you know, we can infringe and we can steal guns. And as that scumbag from California, Swalwell, points out, hey, if you won't turn your guns in when we demand them, we have nukes too. But they're not confining their attempts to infringe to just that. Public-private partnership gives them all kinds of ways to put pressure on people. Access to financial services is another one. A means to punish and suppress lawful firearm-related commerce is the way that one of the NRA stories put it. Now, by the way, I am an NRA Life member, folks, but I'm not a fan necessarily because when it comes to really understanding what shall not be infringed means, they don't. I've had this discussion personally with Wayne LaPierre when he was in Denver advocating for, I kid you not, a big gun control and rat out your neighbor program. If you see something, call Big Brother and tell him the neighbor has a gun. Shall not be infringed is pretty unequivocal. So the National Registration Authority occasionally gets it right, but when it comes to really defending gun rights, I don't believe you can count on them. Anyway, the history here goes way back. Operation Choke Point during the Obama regime morphed into a campaign. No, it didn't morph. It was intended that way. To intimidate banks and payment processors, the PayPals and credit card companies and so forth, into refusing business with politically incorrect clients, including, of course, especially firearms-related businesses. It's the essence of the public-private partnership. It's why it's such an unholy alliance. And now they've turned directly to financial service providers, extorting them with social justice condemnation. Several banks have caved into that. They're using choke point tactics. Recently, the scumbag from New York named Carolyn Maloney, gun control and anti-Second Amendment Central, went so far as to berate the president and CEO of Wells Fargo Bank. And basically, because he refused to buckle to the pressure of their demands. And what she said is, well, I'll read the quote and then we'll give you the real quote. How bad does the mass shooting epidemic have to get, said the gun banner, before you will adopt common sense gun safety policies like we've coerced other banks into doing? Well, she didn't put it that way. But basically that boils down to, what more do we have to do? How many false flags do we have to encourage in gun-free killing zones? What has to happen? And essentially the implication is, we have ways of making you cave. Well, said the Wells Fargo exec, listen to this and read between the lines. We just don't believe that it is a good idea to encourage banks to enforce legislation that doesn't exist. Unquote. Oops. How about legislation that can't exist because it violates shall not be infringed? You see how there's so much wrong here and so very little right because people simply don't understand what the supreme law really says or means? The occasional Cortex sits on the House Financial Services Committee involved in banking oversight, and she basically said, quote, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and not everything has to be done through legislation explicitly. Achtung, yeah, we have ways. We can also use the tools that we have here to pressure change in other ways as well. And the summary says that includes the threat of telling regulated bankster entities, and guess what? The unconstitutional Fed has control over a whole lot of things. So does Congress via its bailouts and its subsidies and so forth. But anyway, if they put them on the official naughty list for not towing the political line, and take away, or at least threaten to take away the goodies that they wouldn't have if we had a constitutional republic anyway, well, you can see where all of this heads. There are even some senators, program senators, Kevin Cramer of North Dakota and John Kennedy of Louisiana introduced a Senate bill called the Freedom Financing Act to ensure large financial institutions cannot deny services to certain constitutionally protected industries. In other words, we're going to try to rein in the public-private partners. Problem, of course, again, if we had a constitution, A, shall not be infringed would actually be the law of the land, and B, we wouldn't have any of these protected, regulated public-private partners doing what they're doing with financial control over a fake fiat money system that shouldn't exist either in the first place. Oh, what a tangled web we weave, is the bottom line. And there's a lot more to the story here, but I think that makes the point. We have a situation where we have a financial system, which is not the constitutional financial system. It's not honest weights and measures. It's not nothing but gold or silver coin being made a tender in payment of debt. It's nothing even remotely related to the real law. And yet, if people don't know what that is or what it means or how we got here, right? They miss the incongruity, the absurdity, and the obscenity of all of it. All right, so what can we do? Again, there are things we can do something about, including come out of her And certainly, I think, when it comes to the financial system of what's becoming the entire world, we can see the mark of the beast at this point. We know where it ends up. The pressure is going to be incredible, folks. The banks will cave long before a whole lot of people who've read the Bible will cave. But ultimately, no one, it says, will be allowed to buy or sell, enter into commerce, unless they cave and take the mark. Of course, that in turn carries a death penalty. So what do? Maybe we better start practicing now, learning to understand the incongruities, see the contradictions, the downright obscenities, and start doing what we can. Yeah, it begins with prayer, but it ends with coming out and being separate and saying, you know what? If the system is corrupt and crooked, if the game is rigged, maybe I don't want to play. If they're going to take my children, if I participate in a corrupt system, and I allow my children to be so-called educated, well, dumbed down is more like it, and that's going to destroy their lives, maybe I shouldn't play in that game. If they're going to say that if I'm a slave, they're going to come and take my property because slaves can't own property, maybe I want to try to come out of slavery somehow or other. Understand what the real rules are, what the Constitution says, what the Bible says, who I really serve. Yeah, it's made difficult by design. But I better start practicing and coming out now. Well, here is the next part of the story. We'll end with this. Garden Rebels says a great piece by Daisy Luther, the organic prepper, 10 ways to sow revolution in your own backyard. And she begins by saying, I think the next war for independence, revolutionary war, will take place in the vegetable garden. Now here I will say, no, I think the greenhouse is more appropriate, but we'll come back to that. Anyway, instead of chemical warfare, she suggests, there'll be rainwater. Instead of bullets, there'll be seeds. And the rainwater needs to be carefully collected, of course, from the gutters of the house, because Big Brother's going to cut you off from the public-private partner supplied version. Instead of soldiers in body armor and helmets, there'll be backyard rebels with bare feet and cutoffs, wide-brimmed hats. Instead of death, there will be life, sustained by a harvest of homegrown produce. Every day, the big industries that run our nation, the things that basically they tell you can't fight because they're public-private partners, take steps towards food totalitarianism. They claim it's about sustainability, but what they're really trying to sustain is their own control. She refers to a beautifully written article by Julian Rose, a farmer activist writer who had a piece called Civil Disobedience or Death by Design, and it goes into some of the elements of totalitarianism on the basis of food. But she puts it this way. Now, here are some of her main points laying this out. I do think this is important and key to understand. And the first one is probably going to shock some folks, but wait a minute. We've heard a whole lot of things that we wouldn't have believed would happen, right? Not too many years ago, who would have thought Americans would get naked for Big Brother and let them search your stuff without a warrant and grope your wife's breasts and even put you in a microwave oven and say, this is for your own good? Yeah. Well, anyway, the European Union, after having done a whole lot of other, they don't even have a constitution anyway, absolutely obscene stuff, is now in the process, and I kid you not, of criminalizing all seeds that are not registered. So first they register the guns, now they're going to register seeds too. And this means that the centuries-old practice of saving seeds from one year to the next may soon be illegal. Guess who wants that? Monsanto. They have their Terminator gene, but they're not alone. There are others that say, Achtung, to control the people, you must control the food. And how better than to outlaw seeds? Collecting rainwater is already illegal in some states, regulated in others, and of course the UN scheming to take over control of every drop of water on the planet. They know that's even better than controlling food because people die faster without water and you can't grow food anyway without it, is moving hard to do that. And you can see their nasty footprints in all kinds of anti-rainwater stuff. You can see it with the EPA and the glancing goose stuff I mentioned up front. The idea that, if you don't own your land, you can't even dig a pond anymore. Achtung! You might have water there. You are not allowed to do that. Wells in a lot of places are now being taxed. I remember years ago here in Colorado where they said, we're going to put a meter on your well. Don't worry. We're not going to do anything with the meter. Well, then you can't put the meter on my well is the right answer. You know where they were wanting to head, though. We're going to eventually limit, tax, and even cut off your ability to get water out of what you thought was your well. Nestle has said they believe all water should be privatized. Now, ponder the irony of that. Privatized. Not your water, mind you, on your private property. No, their water that they're going to buy and not let you have. Codex Alimentarius, another European Union abomination, it's Latin for food code, is a global set of standards that was established, of course, by the United Nations back in 1963. They've been pushing it ever since. And the darker purpose is to, well, control. Literally what they want to do, folks, is they want to take all kinds of things that now people can use to provide themselves with healthy immune systems and healthy bodies, things like herbs and vitamins and supplements, and require prescriptions to limit, to control, and, of course, price them out of the reach of people who think, I don't need that crap that's being sold by the pharmaceutical companies. And furthermore, you have the 1,200-page so-called Food Safety Modernization Act. How's that for a lion title? In which regulations abound that have put many small farmers out of business, leaving more people reliant on irradiated, chemically treated, genetically modified so-called food. So, what can people do? Answer. Become a producer instead of a consumer. The ultimate act of rebellion, she says, is to feed yourself. And there's a lot of good things that come from refusing to eat crap that's not food. It'll improve your immune system, actually improve your intelligence, because a lot of the things that are in the factory food farms have been proven to lop off IQ points, especially among young children, and obviously it'll improve your immune system as well. So she says if there are 10 things here that people need to understand, I'm going to skip over the first few because, honestly, I don't think it's going to work out quite the same way she might hope, and I don't think she does either, really. But if you live in the suburb, she begins, plant every square inch of your yard. Try to grow things vertically. Extend your growing seasons. Well, folks, if you live in the suburbs, guess who's going to prevent you from doing exactly the kind of thing she's talking about? It's even worse, number two, if you live in a city or an apartment. Look into ways to adapt to your situation. Try to grow something on your balcony. Well, no, folks, you're not going to be allowed to. Better get out while you can. If you live in the country, though, she says, go crazy. Don't just plant a garden. Plant fields. Grow veggies, grains, herbs, both culinary and medical. Learn to forage if you have forests and open things nearby. Learn to use old-fashioned methods of composting, cover crops, natural amendments to create a thriving system. Now, here's where I pause, and this is really one of the things that I've been working up to. Understand, all of these are very good concepts. They're good to do, but they take time. It takes time to develop the skills if you've never gardened, if you've never planted. I remember the Jefferson quote, I'm a very old man, but a very young gardener, he wrote very, very late in his life. And he was one of the foremost experts on gardening in the entire world at the time. So, yeah, it takes time to develop skills and to be able to build the infrastructure, to build the soil even. Raise micro livestock is another one of the things on her list. If you can, provide for some of your protein needs this way. Raise chickens, small goats. And she says rabbits. I'm going to scratch the rabbits because, of course, rabbits are not food, if you understand that. I have a friend who is a Torah observant believer who raises rabbits. And he says, well, you can still use the pelts. You can still use the fertilizer that they produce. And you can feed what's left of the rabbit after you've harvested the pelt to a pet, like your dogs. So he's doing it for that reason. But in any case, there are some real options that are available. Now, here's the important part. Save your seeds. Learn the art of saving seeds from one season to the next. And, yeah, it's more complicated than you might think. And importantly, folks, the reason why it takes time here is because you have to learn what works. Learn what works in your own area. We've learned here there are some things that don't do well in our climate that do in others, and vice versa. Watermelons, no. Quinoa, yeah. This is important, too. Go organic, obviously, and here's the key, prepare for some backlash. If Big Brother really intends to starve you out, he's got plans. Know what your rights are and refuse to be bullied. Well, understand, they're already bullying and they intend to do worse. So prepare for the inevitable. Support your local farmers, learn to trade, and of course, learn to use things like silver, real money, in the process of coming out of her. There are indeed a lot of things that we can do and should be doing, and a lot of them actually are going to take some time to learn. So again, start now. Use the obvious contradictions to help you get where you need to go. And do what you can to come out, and don't waste any time. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.